Members, if you'd make your way to your seats, and we will start. We do have a quorum. Because of the, I almost hate to use the term, the fluid nature of the proceedings, we have three committees, I think, going on tonight. And since we haven't passed the cloning bill yet, we're not allowed to be more than one of us. So people are moving back and forth around between committees. So we will just take up our agenda and work with that. And if you need to go to another room for a vote, feel free to do that as quietly as possible. And folks in the audience, don't be discouraged or put off if members are jumping up and down while we're just discussing bills. It's just kind of the way the legislature is as we get close to deadlines. And we'll just work with that. Members, we have a quorum, so we are called to order. And the committee legislative assistant is noting the roll and noted those who have come in and left the room already. Members, we have in our front of us our minutes from the last meeting. Some would motion or move to approve the minutes.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Benson, is that you?
Yep.
Representative Benson's moved adoption. Discussion? Seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. Representative Scott, are you in the audience yet? I know we have been moving around here. Representative Scalzi is here. Representative, you want to come on down, and we'll have House Bill 21 moved. Representative Morrow?
Yeah, I'll move this. I'll move this to be laid over for consideration.
All bills tonight will be laid over for possible inclusion. Yes, thank you, Representative Morrow. Members, we're going to look at the second bill in our packet, 2321. Representative Scalzi, welcome to the committee. If you'd like to proceed with a brief description of your bill, we would be happy to chat about it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I really appreciate you taking time and being moved up on the agenda. I, like you, have other meetings tonight, too, so I'll be moving back and forth.
Okay.
This bill, House File 2321, is related to Metropolitan Transit, which is a division of the Metropolitan Council. I also have an A1 amendment that I would like to have attached to the bill. And the A1 amendment simply says that if this bill should pass, it would sunset in 4 years. In other words, it wouldn't leave an open-ended possibility that people could opt in or opt out. So it sets a limit of 4 years for the process. And I would appreciate if someone could move that amendment.
Well, Representative Scalzi, I think Representative Morrow was about to
move the
A1 amendment to put the bill in the condition in which you wish to discuss it. Members, anyone to further discussion? We've had the A1 explained to us. Seeing none, let's vote. All in favor signify by aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails. The A1 amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I also have an A2 amendment, but it did not meet the 24-hour rule. And I believe the pages are passing that out, or that was the indication that I had heard.
Yes.
So for your information, the A2 amendment will be passed out.
It is being passed out as we speak.
It is an amendment.
Speak slowly. We will, because the bill is being laid over, we will waive the 24-hour rule tonight. I think did we check with Horns? No, we didn't. We didn't check with anyone on the DFL side. Are we okay with the A2 amendment being? And we'll consider the amendment, lay it over, and if it is adopted, the bill will be laid over anyhow. Representative Morrow, do you have the A2 amendment in front of you?
I do not move the A2 amendment.
Thank you. Thank you. Representative Morrow moves the A2 amendment. Representative Scalzi, while the others are getting it, would you explain the A2 amendment again?
The A2, excuse me, Mr. Chair. The A2 amendment provides the funding mechanism, and it pretty much instructs the Met Council to determine the best funding method to provide for the funding for the opt-outs, because it might increase funding, and it's up to them to decide to determine how that would happen.
Okay.
That's basically what the A2 amendment does.
And that would be, of course, funding if there were additional communities who wish to opt out, correct?
Thank you. Yes, Mr. Chair.
Members, further questions to the A2 amendment? Representative Biskins?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Scalzi, in our packet, we have a fiscal note to the bill.
Does the fiscal note reflect the A2 amendment, or will we be requesting a new fiscal note with the A2 amendment on the bill so that as we look to create the omnibus bill, we have good information at our disposal?
Representative Scalzi or Ms. Johnson, who should answer that question? Ms. Johnson, can you speak to that?
Yep. Mr. Chair, the fiscal note in front of us does not have any amendments to it, so this is it's in the original form and not with any amendments to it.
So the chair would recommend that should this bill come back up for possible inclusion, it will have an updated fiscal note, members? Okay. Thank you. Representative Scalzi, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. You have two handouts in your packet. One is like this. It looks like a map of the current opt-outs. And then the other handout that you have in your packets speaks to the amount of subsidy for various provisions of Metro Transit in the metropolitan area. House File 2321, first of all, an opt-out for those of you who are not in the metropolitan area is some years back in 1981, some communities in the seven-county metro area did not feel that they were receiving adequate bus service in their area. So they became opt-outs, and basically they opted out of the Metro Transit system. And they created their own transit systems. So now we have 12 separate communities that have put together six different transit systems, mainly in the Southwest Metro. And they've provided what they feel is adequate transportation system for their citizens. These systems are run mostly by elected officials, which is different from the Metropolitan Council, which is the members are appointed, not elected. And since 1981, these communities have become an opt-out. And to my knowledge, I don't think that they've ever said, gee, this is a bad system, let's not do this anymore. But in 1987, and I'm sure it was because of funding problems, the legislature passed a law that said, okay, you opt-outs can stay and you can run your own local system, but nobody else can do that. So anyone after 1987 that wanted to opt out from the Metro Transit system because they wanted better service was prevented by law. At one point, I believe Minnetonka did in 2002, they got special legislation to do that, and they have not yet created a system. This bill, House File 2321, would open the door again for local elected officials to create their own transit system if they didn't feel that Metro Transit was servicing them adequately. There's three eligibility rules in there, and by the rules on the bill, it pretty much states why they would want to opt out. First of all, they'd have to be located in the Metropolitan Transit Taxing District, so in other words, they're paying taxes for this. Number two is they're not served by the council bus service adequately with bus routes which begin or end within the applying city or town. And number three has fewer than four scheduled runs of council bus service during off-peak hours. So that tells you right there why someone would want to opt out. And what my bill does is opens the door for other people to share in the same expansion of service as their local elected officials would deem appropriate for their service. When the legislative auditor did a report in January of 2011, and we've gone through this quite extensively in the Legislative Commission on Metropolitan Government, and this is the report. And even they say on page 74 that suburban transit providers offer valuable services to their communities, have successfully involved local communities in transit decisions, and have introduced innovation in the region. What my bill does is allows other communities to have that same benefit. Everyone's paying taxes. We all share in the whole system. and we would like to have the same type of service and benefit. So with that, I'll stand for any questions.
Thank you, Representative Scalzi, for your presentation. Members, other questions for Representative Scalzi concerning this bill? Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think one of the great values of this bill is she is teaching us all something about history and inequity. She has laid it out perfectly, what the dilemma is, what the inequity we've built right into the system. That's the problem, I think, with grandfathering in when you move in another direction with funding. And so I think it's a bill that that is a powerful, it's powerfully instructive for all of us about past history and inequity, and shows us why we desperately need to step back and look at the whole question of service and funding, and how do we do that fairly to every taxpayer in the seven-county metro area.
Thank you for your comments. Yes, there will be further discussion moving forward in the weeks ahead about some ideas to discuss how we move forward with with transit and transportation governance in the Twin Cities. I think, Representative Scalzi, your bill probably presumes there will be status quo for some years to come, and would probably respond to that. Members, should we be able to reach consensus in the next year or two on a bigger, different, better way to do it? I think Representative Scalzi would probably be happy to jettison this bill, and we'll move on with a new day. But until then, we shall consider. Thank you for your comments. I saw someone, Representative Benson, I think you wanted to comment.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess it's a question. I'm sure you've thought through this, but and I'm all for giving them the opportunity to provide better services, but could there not be some additional monies needed? I'm just thinking, you know, there's some economies of scale of having a centralized bus unit, and now they're going to have to go find bus garages and mechanics, you know, separate from the fleet and all that. So be thought through that piece, and just so that, you know, they're clear that, and we're clear, I guess, that this could be more money.
Representative Scalzi, if you wish to speak to that, or I know I can make some comments also, but.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Benson. I think you're right. There would be more costs involved. And my bill in no way states that the current opt-outs, which also have those same problems, should discontinue. And the legislative auditor did not recommend that either, because they have a good system run by local elected officials that provides a good service to their citizens. And I just want the same for anybody else who would like to do that. It just seems to me to be a fair way to do it, and if it takes extra funding to do it, we would like to be equal. That's my main reason.
Follow up at all?
No. I just want to be clear that they would. This we're talking about additional monies needed,
yes,
in order to do these things.
Yes, we are. Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, Representative Benson makes the perfect point. I mean, that is exactly the point that we should be making about current opt-outs. When you allow individual communities, and we're all paying for it. They aren't paying for it. We're paying for it. When you allow them all to do their own planning, it's not efficient and effective. I mean, a centralized system absolutely would be more efficient and effective. But we've grandfathered in this one group, and they, I would argue, get the opportunity for negotiating their own Cadillac-level service that is not available to the communities that Representative Scalzi represents.
Before, the chair is thinking about some comments along those lines as well, because this is a very important discussion to have, and we will be having it again and again, I'm sure. But there is something to be said about the efficiency of central state planning. There's also something to be said about what a blunt instrument is when you're trying to accomplish and live in a world where one size does not fit all. I mean, that was sort of the original replacement service provider option that was offered back in the 80s. It was because of some of those very things. And perhaps going forward, we're going to be talking about the ability for cities and counties to pay for their own stuff under a new way of doing business. But again, tonight, the bills we're hearing tonight presumes that we're going to be moving forward for a few years with the existing scenario. And so if we could just hold that thought as we discuss it. But this is great committee discussion. Thank you for your comments. Representative Gauthier, before I go to you, it's been pointed out to me that we have not officially voted on the A2 amendment. So we do need to adopt the A2 amendment so that we have the bill constructed as Representative Scalzi wishes. Further discussion to A2 before we come back to the bill? Seeing none, let's vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. The A2 amendment is adopted as well. Now the bill is in the condition that we're looking for. Representative Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Scalzi, or maybe Mr. Shetnick can answer this. You talk about creating systems by elected officials. And my question is, with the current opt-outs or future opt-outs or both, are those people who work for those transit systems employees of city governments or county governments, or are they private?
We probably have Mr. Clark, or probably Mr. Clark speak best for this, since he represents an association that represents the what we call the opt-outs. But I know in Scott County's case, they are actually Scott County employees in Fire Lake and Shock. Mr. Clark, welcome to the committee. You know the drill.
I do. Thank you, Mr. Chair. James Clark with the Suburban Transit Association, otherwise known as the opt-outs. first of all, I'd like to thank Representative Scalzi for bringing this issue forward. This is certainly not our initiative, but it's one that we support, and I think it sends a powerful statement about the quality of service that the opt-out providers provide to their communities. I'd just like to add, the opt-out providers, most of the surveys that they get back in their ridership are 98%, 99% customer satisfaction. They win national, not only state awards, but national awards. Southwest Transit and Representative Leidiger's district won the Provider of the Year in 2009 across the entire country.
Okay. Can you answer my question?
Absolutely.
Though?
Absolutely. There are... thank you, Representative.
I didn't ask a question for you to have a commercial.
But thank you.
I'm taking the opportunity.
Mr. Chair, do we go through the chair in this committee?
Yes, we should, and the chair should be paying more attention. Thank you, Representative Biskin. Yes, Mr. Clark, if you could be brief. There are other committees and other events that many of us are waiting to attend. So.
Mr. Chair, I apologize.
And that's fine.
Okay. It's a mix. It's a mix. There are private employees. There are also city employees. Maple Grove Transit is run by the city of Maple Grove. So is Plymouth Metrolink. So is Shakopee Transit. There are joint powers as well. Minnesota Valley Transit is joint powers of the cities of Apple Valley, Eagan, Burnsville, Savage. Southwest Transit is Chanhassen, Chaska, Eden Prairie. And there is a mix. Some have private providers provide the service.
Under contract, Mr. Gerlach?
Under contract.
Yes.
Okay. And, for example, Maple Grove Transit contracts with Metro Transit for their service. So it is a mix.
Thank you. Representative Gauthier, follow-up?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's more of a comment than a question.
Mm-hmm.
So Representative Scalzi, when I look at your bill, and I don't claim to be an expert about the Met Council and the Metro Transit system, but it certainly is a shot across the bow. And it has potential to me. You can have 30 different systems here, and then you've created the problem on the opposite end of what we're speaking of, I guess. So I'm hoping that your bill is really intended to open the discussion to find an equitable solution for everybody.
Representative Scalzi, as you talked about that, as I understand your bill, it opens the door for discussions to take place for application to be made, or does it say they can actually do it and opt out? Can you remind me of that, the committee of that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the committee. My bill actually takes away the 1987 legislation that closed the door.
Okay. So it allows them to begin the process, and they have 4 years to do so, and that's what it does. Thank you. Further questions before we, let's see, we voted on the A2. The bill is complete. the chair has not done his job because he needs to say, does anyone else in the audience want to testify about this bill before we lay it over? This is a very good discussion. I'm glad we're touching on it. Mr. Shetnin, welcome to the committee.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Judd Shetnin. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Metropolitan Council. I appreciate the opportunity to be here, and Representative Scalzi and I had a conversation prior to the meeting, and I appreciate that opportunity to talk to you about that. And I think the committee has touched on a point that really is kind of the centerpiece of this, and it has to do with funding. And we have been in a maintenance and preservation funding period for an awful long time now, and we know that MVEST has been volatile in the past, and we've been experiencing cuts to our general fund. And that's why we found ourselves in a system today where we are having to do service reductions at times, and that we're not able to provide the type of service that Representative Scalzi would like to see in her district. And we would like to see that happen as well, but you cannot have that additional service until you have the funds to offer that type of service to everyone. And we don't have that right now. And Representative Scalzi did a great job of explaining the history of the opt-outs, and I appreciate that. The amendment that was adopted, the A2 amendment that deals with the funding, it's difficult right now because what the state has, or what this bill would allow us to do, is to find the way to provide the funds. And transit is funded through the general fund and through motor vehicle sales tax. The council has no authority to decide how we would do this. And we go through the legislature to get that. And in order to do that, the legislature would have to act and provide funding, because the way the bill is right now, it would come out of the opt-outs, 3.74%. So I do appreciate what you're saying, and I appreciated the conversation we had. But again, the issue is the funding. And so what I would also like to touch on very briefly is the auditor's report was brought up. In the auditor's report, they did say great things about the opt-out providers. And the opt-out providers are our partners. I need to be clear about that. They are. They provide great service, but so do we. We provide over 90% of the rides here in the region. We do a great job of that. The other thing is that with this bill, we are going to create an issue of haves and have-nots. And I know that that's not Representative Scalzi's idea here, and we talked about it. She's frustrated with the service in her district. I appreciate that. And so we're going to continue these conversations, and Mr. Chair, as you mentioned, we're going to lay this bill over and continue to have those conversations. And I appreciate that as well. The council has said many, many times that we are happy to participate in that. But the central point in all of this is funding. We can't provide service without the funds. And with that, my comments are done, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Shetnin, for your comments. Members, are questions for Mr. Shetnin? Seeing none, thank you, Mr. Shetnin. Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to testify about this bill? Representative Morrill, I'm sorry. Did you want Mr. Shetnin to come back?
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. What I'm going to just do is, looking at the agenda for tonight, I'm going to make this comment once rather than make it for every bill.
Yes.
And I appreciate the conversation and the discussion we're going to have about Met Council and about suburban transit providers. You know where I'm going with this. Mr. Shetnin, I think, used the funding word about 9 times in his comments. And as we talk about MVEST and general fund, I hope that we make sure to keep in mind Greater Minnesota Transit as we're talking about funding issues and moving funding from MVEST, from general fund, and like from other places. I just want to make that comment once. I don't need to make it on every bill tonight.
Thank you, Mr. Representative Morrill, for your comments. Thank you. With that, the chair will lay over Representative Scalzi's bill, House File 2321, as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you.
Representative Scott, are you Representative Scott back in the audience? Here we go. Good. House File 2560. Members, we need to have that bill moved to bring it in before us, and it will also be laid over for possible inclusion. Member to move 2560. Representative Szymanski moves House File 2560. It's in front of the committee, and there are no amendments for this bill. Representative Scott, welcome to the committee. Your bill's in front of us. If you'd like to explain, that'd be great.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I do have a couple of oral amendments before we begin, if that's okay.
All right. If you'll hold on just a sec while Mr. Burris gets his marking pen out.
Okay.
Ready to go? Representative Scott, if you'd proceed with your
All
oral
right,
amendment.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. On line 1.9, capitalized M in metropolitan, the first word there, and T in transit. And then on lines 1.10, insert between the word reduces and transit, metro transit with a capital M, and then transit with a capital T.
Is that it?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Burris, do you have those, and how should we proceed? We need to vote on those or just incorporate them?
Mr. Chair, sorry, I missed the second one on
1.10. 1.10 would be, thank you, Mr. Chair, inserting the word metro between reduces and transit. Reduces is the first word on that line. And then capitalizing the M in metro and the T in transit.
Got it, Mr. Burris?
Mr. Chair, yes.
Okay. I think we'll just make it an amendment, and we'll just vote on it. Representative Schmanz, you want to move the oral amendment?
Mr. Chairman, I move the oral amendment.
Thank you. A discussion to it. Thank you for the corrections. Representative Scott, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The bill is amended, as noted by Mr. Burris. Okay. Thank you, Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What this bill does is, in the event that the Met Council receives a reduction in their funding for transit, we're just asking that those reductions be spread evenly according to the services that each community uses. And I have with me Kate Garwood from Anoka County, and she will explain in more detail why we need this bill.
Welcome to the committee, and members, there is a map being passed out as we're waiting for Ms. Garwood's testimony. I think you'll be referring to this, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank
okay.
you.
Welcome to the committee. If you identify yourself for the tape and proceed, that'd be great.
Thank you. My name is Kate Garwood. I am the multimodal transportation manager for Anoka County, which gets my fingers into a bunch of transportation issues, in particular transit these days. A planner, I'd like you to know what a planner does. A planner has a primary ethical obligation to serve the public interest. So this is why this particular issue came up, is because the public interest in our communities were being not well served. This map that you have in front of you shows proposed cuts to transit service. Now, this did not come to fruition, but it caused a huge amount of angst in our communities. All the red lines in the Anoka County portion were cuts, complete cuts of service. This represents approximately 70% of the service in Anoka County. This amount of cut in Anoka County is economically difficult, and it's difficult for residents, and it's difficult for those who are dependent on transit for other purposes, for human service type purposes. The other issue that came up with this, when these cuts were being made, there was no public meeting planned in Anoka County. Now, my colleagues at Metro Transit were more than willing to help out after the fact, but it should be automatic that if you're doing things in terms of the public interest, that you think about the people you're impacting. And this area of Anoka County was severely impacted. I'd say we were overrepresented in cuts. The answers could be done, or the answers could be different if we had an opportunity to work with Metro Transit. Had they asked us and the communities, what would you cut if you had a 10% cut? Their entire budget was cut 10%. We would offer that 10%, but we'd do it based on what the communities wanted or what they thought they could get by with. We wouldn't do it just wholesale like this. Now, it may not be as simple as this, but I think the discussion is what we need to have when things like this happen in communities, and Representative Scott has been kind enough to put this into bill format.
Thank you for your comments. Members, questions? Representative Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Was this map made available about the same time that we were going through the budget discussions about what their budget would look like?
It was, sir.
Ms. Garwood? Thank you. Representative Benson, follow up.
You think maybe possibly they created the MEP to get the greatest reaction so that you would push back on the legislature?
Ms. Garwood, you can treat that as a rhetorical question if you wish. But,
Mr. Chair, may I?
Yeah, you may. Yeah. Thank you for your observations. Further questions for the testifier or for Representative Scott? Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to testify for or about this bill? Mr. Shetnan, please. Thank you, Ms. Garwood, for your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Welcome back.
Again, Judge Shetnan, Government Affairs Director of the Metropolitan Council. Appreciate the opportunity to testify against House File 2560. I'd like to make the following remarks.
Certainly.
The Council opposes this bill, as under most budget reduction scenarios, there are unintended consequences that will occur under any definition of proportional, and precise compliance with that will be practically impossible. Reductions are best managed with consideration of multiple factors and considerations. Currently, if reductions are made in our system, factors including route performance, geographic coverage, route frequency, hours of service, alternative service, and ridership are all taken into consideration. These are used because our main objective is to minimize the effect and impact on riders in the communities we serve. The requirement for the proportional service reductions are ambiguous, and are the proportional reductions to be applied to the number of routes, or service miles, service hours, ridership? The point is that we can't reduce ridership by one-tenth of a bus, one-tenth of a route, one-tenth of service hours, or one-tenth of ridership. Now, situations that we found ourselves in last year where the committee adopted a bill that was a $130 million reduction proposed last year is an extreme funding reduction scenario, and it would have significantly reduced or even eliminated service in many communities. Now, as I suspected, and it's right, as they showed the map, that this bill is in response to those service reductions and the conference committee bill that cut $109 million. Now, what I'd like to remind the committee is that we proposed a zero-cut scenario, so this map would not have been necessary. But we are, by federal law, asked to hold public hearings, which we were in the process of doing, and they answered the question. I apologize. I'm not sure what happened as far as the hearing in Anoka County. I'm not aware. We will follow up on that. I appreciate that, Ms. Garwood. I think that that's a good point, and I appreciate that. But based on those cuts, there's a six-month period that we have to go through based on federal law that says if we're going to eliminate routes or raise fares. So we began that process, and that's where this map came from. And the routes were drastic, just like the bill that was passed was drastic. And we know that that is a big problem for the cities and the customers that we serve. And Representative Benson, you know, I appreciate your comments. It wasn't the shock and awe, I will tell you that. It was a massive cut, and we talked about that. We talked about that in this committee. And we weren't kidding, and I know this map was not a fun map to put together or to bring here. I understand that. So understanding that when we talk about service reductions, that, you know, in cases where you're cutting such extreme portions of or proposing such extreme cuts, I would suggest that rather than removing the flexibility that we currently have, that you make those proposals and we have those discussions through the committee process for that type of reduction. Now, another deal with this bill is it changes, you know, we've got issues with how some of our transit partners are held under this bill. The opt-outs receive money through the 3.74% of the motor vehicle sales tax. That is set in statute. So anytime a tinkering, a minor change in service reductions would require that the legislature goes through and makes that adjustment to make sure that everything is proportionate. The other issue, and I'll stop, is the fact that Metro Mobility is a metropolitan transit service. We've got an adopted footprint in law that we provide that service to. If we had to make these proportional cuts in services, we would be out of sync with proportional cuts to the rest of the system, because that is in statute, and that doesn't work that way. So we're just asking to maintain the flexibility. I understand where Representative Scott is coming from on this bill, but maps like that are only maps when we're talking about cutting our entire general fund, which is the most stable part of our budget, bar none. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Questions or comments for the testifier? Members, Representative Benson, who's on the list first.
I guess it's as much a comment as it is a question.
The microphone, please, Representative.
I'm sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You used proportional and multiple considerations, and it doesn't sound or it doesn't look like that anything like that was considered for this map. And I think that's what they're asking for if there were multiple considerations made before you drew this map, I don't think we would be here today with the bill.
We'll take that as a, unless you would like to respond, just comment.
No, Mr. Chair.
Representative Leidiger.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And along those same lines, I mean, without a bill like this that really addresses the proportionality of the system, couldn't we get to a point where you've got one area just paying a huge disproportionate amount of dollars to support another area?
Mr. Chair, Representative Leidiger, I have those concerns. I do, and we're going to have that conversation here in a little bit and a couple of these other bills as well.
Yes. Follow up? No. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think this is more of a comment, but if either the author or Mr. Shetland wants to comment, that's fine. I just think this is a result of the fact that we had a very extreme transit cut last year, and on top of cut after cut after cut after cut since 2002, since I first got here. And so this is like really treating a symptom of a larger problem, which is that this legislature has been, somewhat hostile to transit over all of these years. And so now we have this kind of race to the bottom where, people are concerned about cuts in their own area. And I think we really need to get at the cause, which is that, we have been slashing transit over many years, the general fund portion of it, and it would have been a lot worse last year. Under the bill that was passed off of the House floor. And it was only through the negotiations that took place to end the government shutdown that at least some of these cuts were restored. So I think we've got to look at the big picture here. This is just treating we're managing cuts here. We're managing cuts. That's what this House File 2560 does. And instead, I think we ought to be looking at how everybody can benefit from the multiple benefits of transit in this region, which we've shown over and over are an integral part of, an essential regional growth policy. And so that's my concern with this bill is that, we're managing cuts. It's a race to the bottom, and we ought to be looking at the bigger picture.
Thank you for your comments. And if you'll hold that thought, I think there will be a bill we're going to discuss here in a couple of weeks that we are going to have a fascinating discussion with about how we can stabilize funding for transit. We do have some ideas about that I think we can really get our intellects around. But I will point out, Representative Hornstein raised a fascinating point. I got my little business-oriented spreadsheet out. The 06-07 biennium was a 10% increase in total spending, including general fund. 08-09, 7.1%. I think Representative Hornstein might have had something to do with that one. 10-11, which was also Representative Leader, Representative Hornstein and others, a 3.2% increase in total spending. The one we negotiated in July after much angst and we finally got back to reasonable ground, in my opinion, was an 8.7% increase in spending over the biennium. And just, by the way, in case you're interested, we've set ourselves up for a big fight next time because we're proposing 17.5% increase in spending on transit. And I just don't know, looking at general fund dollars, just where that's going to come from unless the economy really picks up, folks. But I would just, again, challenge, as I have in the past, the notion that we've actually cut the rate of increase. We certainly have done that, I'll grant you that. But I think the transit has been, it's almost a $500 million biennium budget item for Met Council now. It is getting a boatload of money. Representative Hausman.
I will pass.
Okay, thank you. Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just echo your concerns and those figures that you just brought out. And that's one of the things that I think is so quickly forgotten by so many people is the amount of increase that we've seen over the years. My one question might be, I don't know who could answer this, Mr. Shetland or maybe even Mr. Hornstein, is since 2002, since we've had all these drastic cuts, What is the rate of the fares, the rider share of this gone up?
Mr. Shetton, can you speak to the fare box recovery and what has happened to the actual fares over the last several years?
Mr. Chair, I'll do my best. I know in somewhere around 2002, we had a fare increase. It was a targeted fare increase, I believe. I don't know if it was across the board. Then we had another one, I believe, in 2005. I believe we had another one in 2000. I remember this one. It was in October of 2008 was the last fare increase we had. And, Mr. Chair, to just some of the comments that you made a moment ago, that is true when you talk about our budget, but we also have added service like the North Star Commuter Rail Line, the Hiawatha Line, and so there have been those issues when you talk about the general fund monies that we received. Some of those funds that were received were because of the failure of MVEST at that point in time as well. Mm-hmm. And so that needs to be taken into consideration, and I wanted to mention that.
Thank you for your comments. For clarifying, follow-up, Representative Bogan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess, you know, I understand that there may have been two or three fare increases. I guess my question might be more specific than what amount of did those increases, I mean, did they double, triple, or is it, you know, what are they paying? Because I know my costs have gone up, you know, extremely for driving my own vehicle to and from work.
Mr. Shannon.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the council has a policy of trying to make sure we collect at least 30% of the fare box recovery as for the per passenger subsidy, and that is one of the best in the country. And I think that that's similar in a lot of ways to other of our peer cities, Cleveland, Denver, Pittsburgh. I'm trying to think, and that's how transit works nationally. That we're not out of sync with anyone else. The fare increases have generally been a quarter. And that's and that has been what was proposed in 2005 and adopted. And I suspect that the next fare increase, whenever that occurs, would probably be a quarter. I know that Representative Beard and I have had conversations talking about the potential of doing distance-based fares. That's been over cinnamon rolls in Shakopee. And we will, I'm sure, have that conversation again. But we generally have a policy that talks about trying to make sure that about 30% of our fare box recovery is covered for the per passenger subsidy.
Okay, thank you. Further questions or comments? Anyone else in the audience want to testify about this bill before we lay it over? Ms. Garlock, do you want to come back and make another comment, please? And you have identified yourself for the record already, so you can proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There are two other things that I'd like to point out here. There, as I mentioned earlier, planners have an ethical responsibility to serve the public interest. The respect of asking or informing in advance is important here. That's very important here. These folks did not have that kind of notice on this cut. And the issue of working with the communities. These cuts were not proposed with our support, with our discussion, with our involvement. Had that been done, they would look different, or we would have some other response to this. I understand this was difficult situations, but can you imagine what the families in Hilltop or Columbia Heights thought when they suddenly had their trip to work gone? That's the kind of thing I'm responding to when we are asking for this kind of thing. Yes, there are funding issues, but there's more than funding issues that are affected here. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Further questions or comments from the members of the committee? Representative Scott, would you like to conclude or wrap up your bill before we lay it over here?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the good questions. I think it's been a healthy discussion starter, this bill. I go back to the fact of what Ms. Garwood just reiterated. No one was consulted in Anoka County regarding these massive cuts. Anoka County, I would guess proportionally, probably receives less. We probably have fewer routes than the average county. I'm just
basically true.
Yeah. And so for us to take the brunt of the cuts was gave rise to this bill. And I think it's a good policy. Regardless, we're going to have more difficult budget times ahead. And so if something like this is in place, then it, it something like this is not going to happen in the future. So just ask for your support, and just wanted to reiterate too, or just iterate, that this affects just Metropolitan Transit. This doesn't have any anything to do with the suburban providers.
You have no replacement service providers in Anoka County at all, do you? Thank you for that, and perhaps the bills are somewhat related in that regard. With that, the chair lays over House File 2560 for possible inclusion. Thank you for your
testimony. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Members, at this time, I'm going to ask Representative Biskins to assume the chair for a few moments while I go over there and talk about the next three bills.
This is going to be fun.
Can we vote on that? I
won't vote. Reminds me of the Education Reform Committee. Yeah. The guy that knows how to chair.
It's feeling pretty good, Representative Moore. Representative Beard, thank you. I believe we have House File 2696 next on the agenda. Would you like to move your bill?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move my bill, and we'll hear it and then lay it over for possible inclusion.
Representative Beard moves House File 2696 be before the committee. To your bill,
Mr. Chairman, I believe that House File 2696 also has a fiscal note, which has zeros in it, which, of course, a finance chair always likes to see. I also have a DE1 amendment, which further elaborates on what we were trying to do when we drafted the original bill. So I'd like to move the DE1 amendment, and perhaps if you need, we can speak to it, or we can move it and then talk about the bill.
Representative Beard moves the DE1 amendment to get the bill in the shape the author would like to speak to it. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion fails. DE1 amendments before us. Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. The we've been having some discussions about the replacement, or what we know as the opt-out funding. Whenever, and I'm going to try to be sure I get this history straight, and I know I might be able to look at Mr. Clark here for some help if we need to keep things clear. But back in the 80s, whenever the city of Prior Lake actually instigated the discussion, because within the transit taxing district, their city was, they were paying several hundred thousand dollars a year, I believe, for service, which amounted to one bus sporadically per day, one out and one back. And sometimes that didn't happen, apparently. And so the service and the ridership was certainly not commensurate with the money that was being paid by the property tax. So they came to the legislature. In fact, I believe it was your predecessor, Representative Biskins, who came here and said, there's got to be a better way. Prior Lake and Shakopee would like to provide their own. We'll take care of our own. We can do it for less money than the Metropolitan Transit Commission at the time, which was not part of the Metropolitan Council. It was a standalone company, was providing. And so this legislature created the replacement service known as the opt-outs. And indeed, the transit service from Prior Lake, particularly into the metropolitan area, flourished under that scenario, and other cities, as you've heard, have done so as well. Back in 2001, whenever, and we, oh, by the way, transit funding was largely from the transit taxing district, a number that was set by the Regional Transit Board, actually, certified to your local property taxes, collected and then dispersed through the RTB to the opt-out providers and the Metropolitan Transit Commission. In 2001, the legislature, having had the benefit, and imagine what this would be like, members, those of you who have been around this table and never seen a surplus, they actually had several years of multi-hundred million dollar and billion dollar surpluses. So the big idea was, let's cut property taxes, let's take transit off of the property tax, and let's fund it from the general fund surpluses. And so we got into that way of doing things. And oh, by the way, we dedicated then shortly after that motor vehicle sales tax to transit funding, a portion of the motor vehicle sales tax, and somehow the replacement number ended up to be 3.74%. That yielded a number that was about what the opt-outs had been getting, and so that number has been actually in statute ever since. And it has not changed, even though the opt-outs have grown, their service has grown, their needs have grown. 3.74 is that number. And members, with an eye to the future and perhaps other counties and suburban areas deciding that they too could do replacement service,
They do not want to labor under the one-size-fits-all matrix that we're working now. Maybe they can do serve their citizens better. It's going to require some additional funding. And so the proposal in this bill would raise that portion that is set aside from the motor vehicle sales tax, excuse me, to 6.25%. And I believe, Mr. Chairman, that is the essence of the bill. There is some effective dates that perhaps Mr. Burroughs could speak to why they are staggered as they are. And I guess I could stand for questions.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to ask Mr. Burroughs to explain the effective date because that does come into play here as it relates to some other legislation that could possibly happen.
Mr. Burroughs.
Mr. Chair and members, the effective date is designed to anticipate possible additional changes that the legislature could enact in the 2012 session. It's actually another bill that is scheduled to be up in hearing today. And if I could just take a moment, Mr. Chair, to get oriented on that one as well. That's right. Mr. Chair, the other bill is House File 1943, and what the change that one would make essentially would eliminate a freeze on the level of funding that is allocated to the opt-outs for fiscal year 2013. That freeze is in place of the formula-based allocation that's in this bill. And so there could be a difference in impact depending on whether that legislation is enacted as well or not. And so the effective date is designed to clarify that the formula change under House File 2696, the bill that's up now, that change would go into effect following whenever the freeze ends of the specific amount that's mm-hmm. going to the opt-outs, which was enacted in the last budget.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
In other words, if House Bill 1943 were to pass and become law, the earlier date would come into play in House Bill 2696. If it does not, this would come into play for the next legislature that sits in this place. I think that's the concise.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think looking around the table, it might just be myself and Representative Hausman who recalls legislation on the House floor, which was the Option A, Option B type of legislation. I think it had something to do with a Racino bill, if you recall. Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Of course, all of these bills that we have tonight, they're all interrelated. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the common theme, every bill and every community wants more. I mean, that's really the unifying theme. And if they're cut, they want those cuts to be fair. Members, I wonder if I could ask you, because I think all the bills relate to this. Representative Scalzi gave us a page from the auditor's report, and she referenced it, but she didn't go through it. And I think it's important for us to look at the numbers a little more carefully. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to start, I'm just going to focus on the subsidy per passenger. Subsidy per passenger, meaning that's where the passengers actually are riding and what's the subsidy. The lowest subsidy is Metro Transit Light Rail, $1.34. The next one is the Maple Grove Express Bus operated by Metro Transit, $1.41. The urban local bus operated by Metro Transit, the subsidy is $2.42, and then the express bus Metro Transit, $2.61. Those are the four lowest numbers. I just gave you the four lowest numbers. After that, I could read all those communities. They're all higher, and some significantly higher. I really think it's important for you to take a look at that column, because ultimately that has got to inform our thinking here.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Representative Hausman. As we think about that, and I appreciate you asking us to think about that, I think we should also think about things like density and travel distance. Really should ought to weigh into that also when as we look at those numbers and not simply say, and voila, one system is a lot more efficient than another. I think that would be too much at the surface, personally. Right. Representative Beard, in light of the action whereby this committee adopted the DE1 amendment to the bill, is there a need for an updated fiscal note?
Mr. Chairman, I defer to Ms. Johnson, but I don't believe so.
Ms. Johnson.
Mr. Mr. Chair, members, I don't believe so.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Beard.
And that would be specifically because the money is the same amount that goes to the Met Council. Just how they're going to allocate it across the spectrum of providers would change. But the money in and out of the Met Council is the same. I see Mr. Burris is trying to get your attention as well.
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, I would share the opinions, Ms. Johnson. The changes in the DE amendment include technical, and the effective date could be read as a clarification on the point at which these changes would go into effect.
Thank you, Mr. Burris. Is there anyone in the audience who'd like to speak for, in favor, or in opposition to this fine piece of legislation?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Shetnan,
members.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Yeah. Judge Shetnan with the Metropolitan Council of Government Affairs. Appreciate the opportunity again. Just a quick comment on Representative Biskin's point to Representative Hausman is that with the way that the transit or the selected measures by transit service type and provider are laid out in this, they are making apples comparisons on express bus, suburban local bus, urban local bus. We don't have the comparisons for the light rail and commuter rail, but I just wanted to say that those are taken into considerations there. What I'd like to comment on is what was mentioned in the discussion of the fiscal note, that what this is a zero-sum game. I mean, that's exactly what it is. And what it's doing is making permanent statutory changes to the MVES formula that will benefit those communities that are served by the opt-out providers to the tune of $12 to $15 million annually, and will come at the expense of all the other metropolitan communities. That's Minneapolis, that's St. Paul, it's Blaine, it's Woodbury, it's Cottage Grove, Lakeville, Bloomington, and St. Louis Park, to name a few. I mean, all of the others will end up seeing a reduction under this scenario. So what this bill does is create winners and losers in regional transit funding, and the council opposes the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Shetnan. Any questions for the testifier? We do have on the list a Mr. Councilmember Lilligren. Councilmember, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I'm Robert Lilligren. I'm the Vice President of the Minneapolis City Council, and I thank you for this opportunity to address you tonight, and thanks for all that you do for our state, and I think I'm here to bring a little variety so you don't have to just listen to Judd all evening. I serve on about I serve on about a dozen different transportation policy and funding bodies at the local, regional, and even statewide level. Notably, I'm in the leadership team of the Transportation Advisory Board, which is part of the regional government here in the metro that allocates the federal surface transportation funds. I also serve on a subbody of the County Transit Improvement Board, or CTIB, that's called GEARS, the Grant Evaluation and Rankings System, and that's the place where municipal governments have a voice in the CTIB process. Also, the 30,000 people I represent in my ward just south of downtown Minneapolis are heavy transit users, strong transit supporters. I myself am a frequent transit user. In fact, I took the bus here tonight. I'm not here on behalf of any of the other bodies that I serve on, but I am here to bring, I hope, a strong regional perspective, and I have through my high regional involvement. I constantly hear at the urban at the suburban and even at the rural level, strong consensus and interest in increasing transit service. I strongly support a regional approach to expanding transit service, and I acknowledge that the service will look different depending on whether you live in an urban setting, a suburban setting, or even a rural setting. I really support transit as a good economic development tool. I'm speaking against the proposal to increase the ratio of MVEST revenue to the suburban transit providers from 3.74% to 6.25%, because of the negative impact this will have on the entire region's transit service and system. This will not support in any way a regional goal of expanding transit service and increasing transit ridership. And as a committed regionalist, I believe our state does better when the entire metro region does better. And these are funds that will support all sorts of transit service throughout the region, metro mobility, regular route service, express service, dial-a-ride, that are important to the people you represent and to the people I represent. To me, it does little good to the region to take from the majority of transit users to give to a smaller minority, and the benefits and cuts should be shared more equally. I know there are tension between transit service providers and in our region, and to me a change like this does little to assuage those tensions. Rather, it really sets up winners against losers. The underlying problem here is inadequate funding for transit everywhere, throughout the city, throughout the state, and throughout the region. Without this change, I think we have a better chance as a region to reach our regional ridership and service goals without driving this wedge between the providers. So I thank you for your time and for your attention.
Thank you, Council Members. Is there any questions? Committee Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you, Councilmember Ligon. I mean, you're a true transit champion. I just want to share that with everybody on the committee. You've been amazing in the city of Minneapolis and the region as a whole, and I want to thank you. You know, I think that similar to the last bill, you know, we're not really looking big picture here. It's almost like we're rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic, although one part of it is sinking and one is swimming, it seems. But, you know, the problem here, I think, comes, this relates a little to the governance discussion we've had with, you know, that Representative Beard has been a part of. We've had this at the Legislative Commission on Metropolitan Governance. And, you know, I think rather than fiddling with these formulas, you know, Senator Dibble and I introduced on Monday House File 2673, and I think it's a really rational way to look at this, which is let's set up a task force of all of the stakeholders, suburbs, cities, you know, local governments, county governments, who really have a stake in this whole debate. You know, maybe we wind up somewhere where what Representative Hausman has been talking about over the years, which is a you know, one transit agency for the state or the region. You know, maybe we wind up with a Met Council that's restructured with more elected officials. But it seems that in the end of the day that the way to address this is not to continue to rearrange formulas, make transit cuts, but let's relook at that report that was done by the legislative auditor and come up with some governance changes and reforms that I think would avoid the need for, you know, the kind of, you know, drastic change I think Representative Beard is contemplating here. So, again, there are funding issues, granted, but I think it's really a governance issue. And then we have the TAB and CTIB and GEARS, and, you know, it's something that I think we need to revisit. And I hope that through this committee, Mr. Chairman, and the others of us that are on the commission dealing with metropolitan governance, that we're really going to take seriously the need to address governance questions, because I think that's, at the end of the day, what needs to happen, not changing these formulas around. But that's just my thought.
Thank
Mr.
you,
Chairman.
Representative, as the true transit champion on this committee, I appreciate your words. Any other questions, comments by members of the committee? Representative Beard, final word.
Thank you. This has been a good discussion, and again, Representative Hornstein, I just encourage him to record those words. You're going to be playing them back, and they will be very appropriate when we begin discussing after deadlines the Metropolitan Transit Governance Bill that I've been working on, would love to unveil in this committee. We did the other night, I think, in this very room, whenever the commission, the task force that has been, that Representative Scott has chaired, we talked about the transportation component, which includes all transportation, not just buses and light rail, but include transportation across the spectrum. But members, this has been a good discussion. The bills that we're hearing here quickly, these last four, assume that there will be no drastic changes to the governance model we have right now for the next couple of years, and I think they're worth considering, discussing, and moving forward if we need to, because what happened this summer with particularly the opt-outs is, I think, a little unfair, if I can use a very dangerous political word, because fairness is in the eye of the beholder. I just want to point out two things in concluding this one, and then we'll lay this over, Mr. Chairman. When we're comparing the subsidies, I'll take you back to 1984, 85, whenever the Metropolitan Transit Commission was running one bus to Prior Lake. The subsidies per rider were in the tens of thousands of dollars. It was a phenomenal number, which is one reason that we went to replacement service. I mean, I think I saw the adage in the paper, because we had just moved down in those days, that every year the Metropolitan Bus Company could have bought the four or five riders who used the bus a brand new car and been further ahead with the taxpayers' money. So certainly efficiencies, economies of scale are there to be discussed, but comparing regular route service, which is way different than dollar rides, or express service, which is what most of the suburban service is, people moving into the cities and places like that, certainly are different animals to try to compare, although it is very much worth looking at those numbers as we move forward. Mr. Chetnin mentioned something that we have discussed over caramel rolls at my other office at Perkins and Shakopee. Distance-based fees and fares is something we certainly should consider, and maybe legislation that probably won't come up this year but needs to in the near future. Mr. Chairman, just the last comment I will make. When we're looking at 3.74% MVEST to the replacement service providers, which have been growing and building park and rides and new stations and growing their rider base, members, that 3.74% is the number, that's the percentage of all MVEST receipts across the state. Across the state. So as MVEST has been dedicated and will be fully phased in on July 1st, I think, of this summer, 100% of all motor vehicle sales tax goes to transportation purposes. 3.74% is the number that goes to the replacement service providers. The Metropolitan Transit Commission, or the Big Red Bus Company, we used to call it, now they're blue and white and yellow, I think, they've gone from 21.5% to 36% of the statewide number. So to think that we're taking money from the big bus company, the big white bus company, as we call it now, well, that might be slightly accurate, but in the last several years, they have gone from 21.5% of the statewide total to 36% of the statewide total. The opt-out providers have stayed at 3.74. I think it's a reasonable ask to bump that to 6.25. And yes, that does mean that the 36 will come down a couple points, but that the Metropolitan Transit Commission will still get the lion's share of the motor vehicle sales tax in this state. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'm ready to lay the bill over for future consideration.
House File 2696, as amended, is laid over. Thank you, Councilmember Williams. Representative Beard.
1943, I believe.
House File 1943, would you move the bill?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I'd like to move this one for consideration, and then we'll lay this one over as well. This one, basically, you'll see that it just strikes, makes a strike and adds the words fiscal year 2012. In the budget negotiations of last summer, one thing that that came to conclusion, I don't know if we really liked it or what, but we just had to agree to it, not agree with it, and that was that for the next 2 years, there would be a substantial portion of the opt-outs budget taken out. This bill is either a standalone bill, or if it does pass, then, of course, the last bill, should it become law, would take effect a year later, of course. Basically, by making the cuts apply to fiscal year 2012, which we're in now, it would restore the cuts in the second half of the biennium, and that is the bill. Now, Mr. Chairman, before you say, well, gee, where's the Metropolitan Council going to get the money for restoring that cut, which I think is $1.65. I would like to refer in your packet to the transportation funds forecast that came out last Friday. Members, if you'd look in, you've got this in your packet, and I wish there was a page number on. I'm going to have to razz my friends at MnDOT, be sure to put page numbers on every page. But if you go back past the state airports fund, there's an appendix section. Can you go to the appendix section that says transit assistance funds? I want you to look at what's happened to the transportation funds forecast in the November forecast. This is the change from last year when we set the budget. If you get down to actual and estimated uses, the Metropolitan Council's change, their change for budget 2012 is almost $12 million to the good for motor vehicle sales taxes. Their change for the next year of the biennium, nearly $7 million, members. That's how much the forecast had changed, just by a little bit of perking up in the economy. $6.9 million next year. We're asking for 1.65 to go back to the opt-outs. Perhaps this will be in the governor's supplemental budget, one can hope. But notwithstanding that, members, that's what the intent of House File 1943 is. The chair has looked at these numbers and realized the Metropolitan Transit Commission is going to get a lot more money than they were planning on in the July 2011 budget deal that was worked out in special session. And that is the intent of the bill, Mr. Chairman. That's straightforward.
Since the author, I have one, Representative Beard, for clarification's sake. Does the $1.65 million come out of the education shift buyback, the rainy day fund, or the budget cash flow reserve?
Mr. Chairman, good question. The answer is no. These are totally dedicated funds. They will be spent on transit and for transit purposes as per the Constitution of the state.
Is there anyone in the audience who'd like to speak for or against this bill?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, glad to be before you again tonight.
Mr. Shetnin, or is it Mr. Naysayer tonight?
Yes. Before I add my comments, I believe that the fiscal note is a $4.1 million impact, not $1.65 million, because what it is restoring the freeze of the MVEST for fiscal year 2013.
If you could, Mr. Shetnin, let's get some clarification from Ms. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, I'm not prepared to speak to that at this moment. I will get back to you.
Yep, I can speak to it.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
I think our research, I think Mr. Burris looks as though he might be prepared to speak to it.
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair and members, the fiscal note does include in its analysis a line on total reduction for fiscal year 2013 being $4.1 million. Just a little bit on the logic behind that. The way the freeze and cap was established for the suburban transit providers in the budget was $1.65 million below what they received in fiscal year 2011.
Yes.
And so you get to the 4.1 by adding the 1.65 reduction plus the growth in MVEST that's occurred between what they received in fiscal year 2011 and what they would receive under the bill in fiscal year 2013.
Representative Beard, to that
thank
point.
You for the clarification on that. Yes, the 1.65 was to be added back in, but it does apparently unfreeze the cut that was made, or the increase they were entitled to and didn't happen, I guess, is another way to say it. So thank you for the clarification.
Mr. Shetnin.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll address a few of the comments here. First of all, this does undo the budget agreement that we had in place last session. It was a 50-some million dollar budget reduction that we had multiple groups participating in. It wasn't just the opt-out providers. Metro Transit used their reserves. Our partners at the County Transit Improvement Board contributed $15 million. We converted federal funds, capital funds, to operating. We used RELF funds. I'm not sure why this should necessarily be the funds that should be restored. It still is a zero-sum game here if we do this. Representative Beard is correct that the forecast is improving. However, when we do get those additional funds through the forecasted amounts, if they are true, we use those and put them through our regional allocation process. So when we talk about the money between the 21.5% and the 36%, that is just not the council's money. We use that, we put that through our regional allocation process, which opt-out providers benefit from. Southwest Transit, Minnesota Valley Transit, they use that money. It's Metro Mobility is eligible for that. Our dial-a-ride programs are eligible for that, and our regular out transit service is eligible for those funds. So it is not just the funds for the council. And the other thing is that with this budget forecast, if the way that the bill is constructed is that the monies that went to the opt-out providers were set. If the forecast were to go lower, we would have paid. The rest of the transit system would have paid, and they would have retained that money. So they had budget certainty. We didn't. And what we're saying here is that the forecast is up, which is true. And we are not the only beneficiary of that. Of that money, everyone is eligible, and we do have opt-out providers that are participating in that today. So I just want to make that clear. We cannot support this bill, first of all, because it was part of the budget agreement, and I don't know if we want to go down that line right now. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, Mr. Chair, just thank him for his comments. And again, we're kind of underscoring the difference in philosophy that one size fits all if it's run from a central planning agency. Is that the best way to fit everybody, or do we let the local folks run their transit services that fit their needs as well, including some plans I understand that have been put on hold because of the budget deal that was made in July? I probably would not have been fond of bringing this bill had I not seen the forecast and seen the numbers that are here, and so I think it could be easily accomplished. Members, with that, I'm prepared to lay the bill over, and we'll consider, unless there's other comment, Mr.
Any
Chairman.
Questions from the members of the testifier? Seeing none, Mr. Shetman.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. As part of that budget deal, the funds that were collected from the opt-out providers were funds that were in reserve from four of the six providers that were in excess of 100% of their annual operating expenses. So Representative Beard is correct. We talked about some of those plans were planned for, which is true, but again, they were reserve funds. The council, we did use some of our reserve as well in this. We actually use that. I know the CTIB partners made their contribution. So when we talk about making these restorations, it should be to everyone who participated in that, and we shouldn't just single out one group. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, Mr. Shetman, just quickly, with an almost $12 million surplus and we're looking at a restoration to the opt-outs of $4 million, what happens to the other eight? Metropolitan Council?
Mr. Chair, what would happen with that, and I just want to make sure everyone is aware of this, and I know Representative Morrow isn't here at the time, but we go through this MVES chart that has shown that it has been extremely volatile. Mm-hmm. Even though the general fund has been cut significantly over years, or else we've received some additional money, but that's because MVES has performed so poorly, that the general fund has been our most solid funding source. So, yes, we are expecting, we're seeing a forecast where there's additional money, but again, it's forecast. And if those monies come true, we put that through our regional allocation process, which everyone is available to use. In the previous bill, what we were talking about is making that shift, which would have been $12 to $15 million annually, $24 to $30 million annually, that would have been a shift to those six providers, which we believe is unfair. And currently, with this bill, making that restoration goes back on the budget deal that was in place. And if the forecast falls apart and that money isn't there, they still have budget certainty, and we still bear the risk on that. So for those reasons, we oppose the bill.
House File 1943 is laid over. Representative Beard.
You're welcome. Let's take a break. Chairman, I'd like to move House File 2685. We'll discuss it, and we'll lay it over for possible inclusion as well. And, Mr. Chairman, I do have an A2 amendment to 2685. I'd like to move that at this time, put the bill in a condition we'd like to discuss.
The A2 amendment has been moved to get the bill in the shape the author would like it. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed say no. Motion's adopted. Representative Beard, House to the bill as amended.
Mr. Chairman and members, as part of the discussion tonight, you've heard about fare increases of 25 cents over the last decade. There's been a couple of them. There hasn't been one since 2008. And with the
rising price of diesel fuel and gasoline for every one of the citizens in this metro area, in this entire state, actually. The cost to Met Council and have certainly been going up, and so it seems prudent that because we haven't heard any more action on a possible fare increase to capture some of those costs, that we encourage the Met Council to offer that on certain of their routes. And I think you'll notice that the folks who are already eligible for a discounted fare would not apply except during peak hours. That the it's a rather targeted fare increase that's designed to raise additional funds, particularly for our friends in the opt-out community. A bill that I have not brought forward this year is one to decouple the fares between the opt-outs and the regular route service. At the moment, we have pretty much a unified fare structure in the metropolitan area, which prohibits the suburbs, the suburban providers, from increasing their fares independent of the Met Council, apparently. We can have that discussion at another time. But by doing this, basically, it'll put a little more gas in everybody's tank, and that's the purpose of the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Any questions of the author, Representative?
My questions might be to Mr. Shuttman. At one point, by law, we had the highest fare box recovery in the nation. We required that in state law, and it was the highest fare box recovery in the nation, which I think we've always met. And I don't know if that is still the case.
Representative Beard?
And I know, while Mr. Chetton's coming, back in the Regional Transit Board days, and I don't hark back to it because they were the good old days, because I remember it, 35% was our number in those days that we shot at. And we routinely met that number across the board. Now, not every type of transit hit the 35% number, but that was the number we strove for in fare box recovery, which was one of the highest in the country, and yes, we were pretty proud of that.
Mr. Shuttman.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Judge Shuttman with the Metropolitan Council, appreciate the opportunity to be here. Representative Hausman, I do not remember if our fares have been statutorily programmed before. Maybe they were. That would have been before my time. I can certainly come back and talk to you about that. But I do know, as I mentioned,
just to clarify, not the fare.
Representative Hausman.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. But it's that the fare box recovery, in other words, of your, you know, what
that's a policy.
Yeah,
it has been. I'll give that to Representative Beard if you'd like. You're right.
Mr. Chairman, and we were just discussing, that's always been a policy. The fare box recovery percentage has been a policy of either the Metropolitan Transit Commission, RTB, or now the Metropolitan Council.
I see. That's right. Not established in law. And then, Mr. Sure. Chair, if I could, you know, one of the issues about fares, my understanding is, Mr. Shuttman, that every time we raise fares, there is a decrease in ridership, that there are some, that the economics of it have to work for people, and that with a fare increase comes the potential that ridership goes down. At a time when, if you're on our highways, you know we want to move more people who are willing to become transit users to be part of the congestion relief in the metropolitan area, one of many tools, but it's certainly one that we hope happens, and that's my understanding, that that's the risk we run.
It is.
Mr. Shuttman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, you are correct. We know that when you raise fares, we do lose ridership. Generally, it's somewhere between 3% and 4% of our ridership that we lose, and it takes roughly 18 months for us to make that back up. But that is a figure that is consistent with how transit operations run through the system. When you raise fares, we always know that we lose some of those folks.
Mr. Shuttman, if we offered the rides for free, would we increase ridership?
Mr. Chair, if we offered the rides for free, we'd need a big bump in state funding to operate the buses.
Representative Benson.
Well, just to that comment on the economics of it, it's so... elastic and inelastic is the terminology that you're aware of in the business speak to this. But so it's elastic for about 18 months in terms of people making decisions.
That's right.
But in the long term, it's very inelastic because we've seen a steady increase, even with fares, in ridership. Isn't that true?
Mr. Shuttman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Benson, that is true. And there are other factors that are involved in that as well. The price of fuel,
We see people who migrate from their cars to the transit system when there is a when fuel becomes very expensive, and there are price points that we know that, that will drive people to the buses, and that's one of the inherent problems we have with our transit system is people, when the price of fuel goes up, people aren't buying cars, MS goes down, and we have a shrinking general fund, and we find ourselves in a box. Mm-hmm. And that is one of the big problems that we have with our system. It, we kind of works against ourselves that way, but Representative Benson, you're correct, and I can certainly have our folks who do the financing and do this work come see you if you'd like to talk about it, because it is very interesting.
Representative Benson.
Yeah, I would. Thank you. But in the same vein, and the things that you said would, you know, in terms of hurting MVEST and the like, you're going to drive more people to paying fares, so you're going to actually improve your ratios in terms of dollars being paid in fare box.
Right. Mr. Chair, Representative Benson, but the same issue is that when the price of fuel goes up for everybody else, it goes up for us as well. And the price of fuel is very expensive. We buy over seven million gallons of fuel a year. So when the price goes up a dime, it affects our budget by $7 million, $700,000.
Representative Benson,
do you not hedge that by buying futures? You know, making sure that you can have a stabilized rate.
Yep, Mr. Chair, Representative Benson, we do that, but we've got contracts that expire every month, and we have to re-up those. We do that on about an 18-month continuum, and every month they expire, and we have to renew those. So eventually, down the line, we're paying the piper for that.
Mr. Shetnan, to the bill as a whole, is the Metropolitan Council ready to show the Chairman of Transportation Policy and Finance a little love here?
Oh, Mr. Chair. I'm happy to show him some love, shake his hand here. Unfortunately, on this bill, we cannot support it. This was one of the issues that we talked about.
Mr. Shetnan, I'd like to tell you that as a person who has a reputation of being Dr. No, you're putting me to shame tonight.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Chair, you know, we go back a long time, and yes, I know that you have earned that nickname, especially on Metropolitan Council bills.
Mr. Shetnan, to the bill.
To the bill. Let me speak to this very briefly. This was part of our budget discussion last year. Well, Governor Dayton, when we moved forward, did not want to move forward with a fare increase. Mm-hmm. This bill would create a fare increase in potentially in 2012. As I mentioned earlier, when we do fare increases, we have to go through a federal process. That it's a six-month process that we have to go out and take comment and go through that process. And we could not do that under this bill, plus the fact that part of this budget deal was brokered on not having a fare increase. Now, I will tell you, as we move forward and put together our next budget, that we look at all factors and ways that we can address our budget, and fare increases are always considered. And I will also mention, again, and I know Representative Beard mentioned this as well, that we have had discussions about fares and how you could target those to particular distance-based fares or other fares in order to potentially make this work for some of our other providers. One issue with this bill is that it does talk about it says with the amendment that 25 cents during peak hours and non-peak hours for passengers who are not provided a discounted fare. We have a number of programs that have discounted fares, meaning our Metro Pass, our U-Pass, College Pass, our tokens for social service agencies. We've got discounted 10 ride fare cards. We provide free rides to veterans, and we have prepaid fares that have a 10% discount. And so that would have to be worked out as well. I think when we have this fair discussion down the line, that is something I can talk to Representative Beard about. And I really apologize for being such a downer tonight.
Representative Beard.
Mr. Chairman and members, before we lay this over, unless there's anyone else who wants to testify about the bill, and thank Mr. Shetner for his comments. And yes, we have good give and take just in the course of being a chairman and interacting with him as the government affairs specialist for the Met Council. Members, the bills we've discussed tonight and are laying over are all presupposing that there will be no change. It'll be business as usual with Metropolitan Council running transit in this city and everyone else reacting to whatever it is they come up with in St. Paul here. Going forward, though, there's going to be a great discussion around the Legislative Audit Commission report. on transit governance. And I, if nothing else, and this is not exactly why I did the bill, actually a couple of them I would like to see pass, but members, these help underscore and punctuate the need to have this discussion on transportation governance in the larger metropolitan area, indeed in the whole state. But right now we're focusing just on the seven-county metro area. The vagaries of the general fund back in the days when the dot-com bubble hadn't burst and the housing bubble hadn't burst and the government wasn't printing 40 cents of every dollar out of thin air, we could actually have surpluses in this state, and we had something to work with to fund transit. And that was the discussion. Things have really changed now where every budget cycle we're looking at an economy that's just barely pulling its weight, and the budget deficits, thank goodness they're shrinking. We're grateful for the economy and for the restraint we've been able to put on. But going forward, as somebody, believe it or not, who actually cares about transportation in the larger picture, including roads and bridges, airports and ports, railroads and highways, and transit, mass transit, there is an important role for that to play in our economy and in our society, but I really do yearn for a more stable funding source that isn't nearly as contentious when we come down here and argue over whether it's a cut or whether it's an increase. And I look for a model where we actually have the local folks having more of a say in what kind of service they have and what kind of tax they want to levy on themselves to pay for the service that they look for their citizens. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'll conclude my remarks and look forward to discussing this further at another time.
House File 2685 as amended is laid over. Chairman Beard, before we adjourn, do you have any announcements?
Mr. Knisely, do we have any announcements? I'm thinking there is no Friday meeting for this committee, but next week we have a schedule that Mr. Representative Biskins, if you want to look at there and just remind us
members
of our meetings on Monday and Wednesday.
Yeah,
and possible Friday, I think, right?
Well, I'm going to ask Mr. Knisely if he wants to.
Mr. Knisely, pull your microphone up there and tell us what we're doing.
Mr. Chair, members, I just wanted to lay out the timeline, and I'll email committee members with this for the second policy bill that this committee will be considering. We hope to post the delete all by 5 o'clock Saturday. We're actually aiming for the end of the day tomorrow, but if not tomorrow, by the end of the day Friday, Saturday. Walkthrough and testimony on the delete all amendment will be Monday, March 12th. The vehicle for the bill will be House File 2685. That was just heard. And then amendments will be due to committee staff by noon on Tuesday, March 13th. And then those amendments will be considered in final vote by this committee on the bill on Wednesday, March 14th. There will also be some other individual bills heard by this committee next week. And on Wednesday evening, more hearings on bonding bills.
Wednesday evening for bonding bills. Some members will be keeping next Wednesday evening free, and we'll see.
Mr. Chairman, and possibly Monday evening if needed, but
okay,
if we need the time.
Thank you for that.
Representative Hornstein?
Yeah, that's
okay. Understood. With that, members, the committee's adjourned.